broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use continues now. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the broadcast for January 25th in the year of our Lord, 2016, hour 2 at 2. The goal always to protect life, liberty, and property and to promote God, family, and country and the traditions of our founders. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. We believe the checks and balances put in place by the founders are absolutely brilliant and the solution to the problems we face. We don't believe in a revolution, ladies and gentlemen. We think a restoration is the best plan. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Before our guest, Kurt's going to tell you about these, exiled teachers, Kurt?
You know, did you ever hear about exiles when you were growing up? The only time I remember hearing about anything, any individual was an exiled individual. They were like, maybe a king of a country, and then the people didn't like him much, and so they cruised to another country and
They're held up in hiding or whatever.
Well, anyway, the headline reads, City Pays Exiled Teachers to Snooze as Rubber Rooms Return. And they talk about these things that in the, they call it the Department of Education building in Long Island City. This is New York, Queens, New York. They call them reassignment centers, and they say they have 16 exiled educators, including a dozen packed into one room where they do virtually no work. They listen to music, do crossword puzzles, chat, and as this, they have a photo from the New York Post, reveals they doze on the taxpayer's dime. The rules forbid beach chairs. Oh, yeah, you can't have a beach chair in there. And air mattresses, but not nap time. The teacher sprawled on the floor, pulled a wool hat over his eyes to shut out the fluorescent lights, and slept. Others prop up two chairs to recline or just lay their heads on the table. It's gone right back to the way it was in the old days, an old-fashioned rubber room, one banished teacher said. So they got all these pictures and everything, and they say many teachers settled charges. That would be charges between the Department of Education and the teachers union about these misconduct or whatever. And they say many of these teachers settled these charges by paying fines, and then they returned to classroom. While some still expelled were scattered across the five boroughs. But the rubber room deal is routinely violated, they say. No one pays any attention to the agreement. Sounds kind of like federal government stuff. That's a veteran paralegal who helps defend the teachers. The Department of Education refused to say how many removed teachers and other tenured staffers remain in limbo. The Long Island City cast-offs begin their day by reading newspapers, then turn on the radio. But the bottom line is, Sam, just a little bit more government snafu going on. Situation normal, all fouled up, huh?
What do you say, Pete Sepp? Welcome, my friend.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, another problem here. We're talking about wasted time, wasted tax dollars, wasted opportunities. And unfortunately, we see some signs of this in other government employment professions, from infrastructure, you know, departments of transportation, even police sometimes have this kind of strange, I guess you could call it another world, where certain employees are basically paid to do nothing. There are still others, of course, who are on the public payroll and are doing little more than representing their union, which is rather interesting. Taxpayers paying folks to go negotiate better contracts that cost taxpayers more.
All right, there you have it. The number of scandals are virtually unlimited, it seems. What do you think? The battle rages for president of the United States. There's two breakout people, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Do you think one of those guys are going to be the nominee, or do you expect something to change drastically with the primaries?
Well, it's possible that Marco Rubio, for example, might make a run when the primary season shifts further south, he might have a much stronger capacity there to attract votes than he has shown so far in Iowa and New Hampshire. But this is definitely going to be a battle for getting fiscally responsible policies, specific proposals on the books in front of voters. I mean, we have seen Donald Trump release his tax plan, very, very large reductions in taxes across the board. So much so, in fact, Tax Foundation, one of our sister organizations in the movement, said that even with the economic growth impact of Donald Trump's tax cut plan, he's still looking at a revenue shortfall of upwards of $10 trillion over 10 years, which is huge. That means he's going to have to propose some major reductions in federal spending to keep the budget deficit reasonably low. And so far, we haven't really seen that. Only a handful of candidates actually have said anything specific about how they would reduce the size of government. We hear a lot about what they would do to reduce tax burdens, but far, far less about reducing spending.
All right. Where do we go from here? Do you think Trump would be, or Ted Cruz would be, or Marco Rubio would be, well, more in line with the NTU and our sentiments on that we need to reduce the size and scope of government?
Well, I think that Ted Cruz has certainly proposed a number of plans in Congress, including he's backed the so-called Penny Plan. That's actually something that Rand Paul has been very aggressive in sponsoring. That what that essentially does is ratchet down federal spending on a yearly basis by 1% across the board. And people say, well, that doesn't seem like a lot. Well, it isn't, but it can be very effective in bringing federal spending under control if you keep cutting 1% every year, because you're taking that 1% out of a dwindling spending pie. And what you end up with, really, is a government at the end of 10 years that's actually much smaller than just 10%, because, again, it's accumulating. And that is a
In other words, the point is that 1% becomes bigger over time.
Yes, absolutely.
And it stops the increase in spending.
That's right. That's right. It's a real cut. It's not just a slowdown in the rate of increase. And that's something we have to start focusing on. I mean, you take a look at the most recent report from the Congressional Budget Office, the long-term budget outlook. It is a scary document to behold, because what it's saying effectively is there is no longer any pause in federal deficit spending that will give us time to do things like entitlement reform in the near future. We are going to have nothing to look forward to but steadily increasing deficits, which makes entitlement reform especially an imperative right now. We can't wait for another presidential campaign and another four-year commission and a lot of debate in Congress. We have to start putting in place changes now, even in this Congress.
All right. You almost wonder if it's possible. It seems like whenever they are on the campaign trail and or on the debate stage, I don't really see a whole lot of discussion about these solutions. They're more interested in kind of battling with each other about who's better and bigger and faster and smarter and whatever. And they don't really seem to dig into these details, Pete.
Yeah, they don't. John Kasich, of course, has done a decent job in laying out some areas of federal spending that he would cut back on. But even there, you don't necessarily see specifics. What he's saying, for example, with Medicare and Medicaid, he wants to have a restricted growth rate. In other words, they'll grow 2-3% slower in years ahead than they are now on their current track. He's not, though, really elucidated any kinds of reforms that would actually get us that lower growth rate. Only some very nebulous details. And we're going to have to know more about this and implement them.
Do you think it's even possible in the current environment to reduce the size and scope of government in any meaningful way? Is it even possible, Pete? I mean, I know in theory it's possible. You can lay out the economic, but is it really possible? In other words, with the lobbyists, with the way the system is, with the manipulation of both parties, with, I mean, it goes on and on. Is it really possible?
It is possible, but it's not going to be an easy or comprehensive thing. I think that one of the things we on the limited government movement have failed to learn is what, unfortunately, the bigger government movement has learned all too well. You don't necessarily grow the size of government with gigantic new sweeping initiatives. Yeah, you had Obamacare. That certainly was a sweeping initiative.
All right, hold on. Let's let you finish on the other side of this pause. Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union. He's the president, folks. We'll talk about the meaningful change in seconds.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
Oh, I had a problem with breathing. When I stopped to do some walking, I had a problem. I had a heart attack, my second one. I take this pill and I feel great.
I had three bypass 10 years ago, and I was in bed almost 24 hours a day, and painkillers out of this world. I started taking this. I'm down to almost no painkillers at all. And it helped my circulation 100%. My medical doctor, and I went to see him, and he could not believe it. There's no way it could have went down that fast. He could not believe it. I showed him what I was taking. He said, don't stop taking it. I wouldn't do without it. It's unbelievable.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, Pete Sepp is with us, president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. Pete, right before the pause, you were saying those of us who are in the limited government movement, if you will. Oh, are you there, Pete?
Yes.
Okay, those of us who are in the limited government movement, or the smaller government movement, you were saying?
Yes. Those of us in the limited government movement sometimes ought to take a step back and look at how the left has succeeded in so many of their initiatives to expand government. On the one hand, sure, you have the big sweeping ones like Obamacare, but then try naming something as comprehensive as that they've gained on over the past decade or so, and you'd be hard-pressed to come up with many of them. That's because they tend to expand government bit by bit. They move that ball down the field yards at a time rather than always trying to throw touchdown passes. And unfortunately, the deficit has grown dramatically. The outlook now for deficits is really incredible, to the point where by 2025, less than 10 years from now, we're looking at a $1.23 trillion deficit. And besides Obamacare, though, here's what the left has done. They have done things like expanding the eligibility for the federal disability program. They've built in new types of benefits for Medicare that have gradually added to the costs. They've increased all the kinds of incentives for states to participate in federal aid programs. And that kind of buck passing year after year has grown the Medicaid program and some of the road programs. So they're doing this gradually, while unfortunately not enough of us are on the limited government side to say, hold it, and propose small reduction initiatives of our own.
We're always running around hoping for Hail Marys.
Yes, yes. And if you go gradual, no, you're not going to make the kind of progress that you'd hope to see in dramatically reducing the size of government, but you're going in the right direction. Building upon victories is something we have to learn to do better, because it inspires people in our movement to keep trying.
Now, one of the things that people are starting to say now is, Pete, I appreciate your idea. I agree with you. However, we're out of time. You know, you look at places like Detroit. You look at other places, and they've got just an absolute, they've ran their cities right on into the ground. And the whole nation is going to run right into the ground if we don't do something fast. So I appreciate your idea, but we're out of time. What do you say to those people?
Well, I say you've got to start somewhere. If we're waiting for some kind of perfect opportunity to dramatically scale back the size of government, we're going to probably spend another year in Congress spinning our wheels, and we can't afford to do that. By doing the work, by making gradual gains, we make larger gains possible in the future.
All right, so even though we're out of time, what about, are we going to run out of time? Are they just going to run the nation right into the ground?
Well, I think that we only have now perhaps a window of 7 or 8 years at the most to put major changes in place. Where we can start, I think, is with the federal disability program. That, after all, is facing a massive fiscal crash this year. And if we can make changes to that program, I think we can demonstrate that, well, here are some changes that might benefit Social Security's retirement program. If we start instituting those, here are some changes that might benefit Medicare and Medicaid, such as greater means testing, restricting some of the formulas for benefits, and working on improper payments. If we do those things and we make cost cutting a daily exercise, I think that we will have just enough time to make the changes we need to keep a fiscal meltdown from happening in the United States. It's going to be close, very, very close, but we've got to get to work now.
Are there any real leaders, though, that can really push that ball? The fact is, Rand Paul would be probably the closest, but yet, you know what, he's not even on the campaign stage anymore. He's not, I mean, his whole campaign, I don't know why he hasn't really dropped out. It's fizzled, he's done. Even the conservatives aren't really thinking he has a chance anymore.
Yeah, this is a problem. Somebody like Ted Cruz, for example, who's actually worked in the Senate and voted to reduce federal spending, we could have a chance with him. He might have some plans. He would work with somebody like Rand Paul if Ted Cruz were president. Even if he doesn't make the nomination, he can go back to a Senate that can make a difference now if they're willing to roll up their sleeves and start instituting some of these changes structurally to entitlement programs especially.
All right. You know, a lot of people think it all needs to happen on the federal level, and I think we could do more on the local level and the state level than we could ever get done on the federal level, which would really, in other words, good things trickle down. And I know people believe the local government's the, you know, at the bottom, but really the truth is local government closest to the people is at the top. And the feds are at the bottom with the most limited of all responsibilities. No doubt the responsibilities are important and the checks and balances are critical, but you know, we need to look at it properly. The local government is on top and the federal government's on bottom. That's how the founders intended it. I think we can make more gains on the local level and on the state levels than we can on the federal level at this point.
Yeah, that's probably right. And it can start with the most basic of things. If, for example, you notice that your property tax bill is rising dramatically, why, you can form a citizen committee of your own to say, look, we don't need another tax increase in our community. Here are 7, 10, 20 things that other state or local governments have been doing to reduce their expenditures that we're not practicing in our own community. Let's try them. I mean, this is the beauty of the internet. It provides for the sharing of information and cost-cutting strategies that work elsewhere and can be applied right where you live. Everything from better competitive bidding for sewer infrastructure to rooting out improper payments in the local benefit programs. There are plenty of them, especially in public housing. Taking a look at sharing services among local governments, there are many opportunities, everything from accounting and finance to motor pools for school buses. You'd be surprised that a lot of local governments don't really practice these things on a daily basis because either they've never been exposed to the ideas or citizens simply haven't spoken up loudly enough.
Yeah, you know, we want to support the sharing of appropriate services to reduce costs and expense. At the same time, we don't want regional government to take over. How do you get that balance?
Well, you have to have what I think is an attitude whereby they're sharing the services, but they are not forming what are called special district governments to do it. Because when that happens, you're basically creating a new bureaucracy that cancels out the savings you get from sharing the services. Citizens have to make these relationships by themselves, basically. Make sure that a private contractor is providing service to several governments, and the private contractor is subject to constant competitive bidding. If you do that, and you make sure that the services are getting shared, but a new bureaucracy is avoided, then I think you're making a gain for taxpayers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, NTU.org. They're basically a think tank. They've got all kinds of options to reduce the size and scope of government. They put their money where their mouth is. They partner with local people all across the country. The whole goal is the National Taxpayers Union is to, hey, taxes are okay if they pay for the proper role of limited government. That is legitimate. What taxes make sense? When, how, why, for who? Those are all the questions. How we manage it is all up to each local community. However, there are guidelines that can be put in place that can make a tremendous difference. This constant bidding process for competition and to keep people honest. This idea to have private sector organizations serving local municipalities is all designed to keep a handle on the cost of government and rein in those who would pervert the process for their own financial and political gain. Pete Sepp with us, ladies and gentlemen, NTU.org. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite News the Networks Refuse to Use radio station.
Proclaiming liberty across the land, you're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you familiar with the term vigor, strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2. 800-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
Pete Sapp, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, our guest, ladies and gentlemen. So, Pete, in a baseball game, they always say, keep your eye on the ball. In your view, what do Americans need to do to most keep their eye on the ball for the proper role of limited government, sir?
I think on the federal level, they need to understand that the massive government benefit programs we've created that essentially make states partners in irresponsible spending have got to be trimmed back, and we can certainly do that on a gradual basis, and the sooner we get started and the sooner we begin showing results from these gradual changes, the easier it will be to make the larger changes. And again, we don't have that much time. We also need to think about tax policy. Right now, for example, we have the opportunity to permanently protect the internet from state and local access taxes. That would be a nationwide ban on the ability of governments to basically levy 10-11% tax burdens just for going online. A federal ban has kept that from happening since 1998, but it's periodically renewed and has almost expired on several occasions. We ought to make that permanent law and permanently protect taxpayers from the prospect of access taxes.
That's the federal level. What about the state and local levels?
At the state and local level, we simply have to tackle the question of government retirement benefits. For state and local employees, the pension programs and the health care programs are among the largest cost centers and cost drivers in the future. It's one reason why Detroit got in such trouble. One of the biggest, actually. It's one reason why many California cities have either gone bankrupt under Chapter 9 bankruptcy laws or have come very close to doing so. They've simply made promises to their own workers that they cannot keep. That's not only unfair to taxpayers, it's unfair to the workers themselves. We've got to revisit these programs, especially retirement eligibility ages, inflation-protected cost of living adjustments, generous benefits that kick in at sometimes 80% of a person's final salary. Those are unaffordable, and they have to start restructuring those kinds of programs.
A lot of times people are too afraid to make those first steps, and that's kind of where we need to, educate?
Yes, absolutely. And simply approach and try to make partners out of the government employees themselves and say, look, it's in your own best interest to have a program that is stable and will be able to pay benefits years and decades from now. You can make the most generous promise in the world with other people's money, but if you can't keep that promise, what good is it? And that is what we are coming down to with so many of these government benefit programs. It starts with the employees themselves.
Any quick key items on NTU.org people ought to focus on?
They ought to be looking at H.R. 644. That is legislation that contains that permanent ban on internet taxes. It has passed the House. It will be subject to a Senate vote very soon. Of course, Congress is not voting this week because of this massive snowstorm, but they will be coming back in next week, and we think that's going to be one of the first items for consideration in the Senate.
H.R. 644, reject internet taxes, huh?
That's right.
All right. I appreciate it, Pete, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Take care, my friend.
There he goes. Pete Sepp, always doing a great job. Normally, we keep him the whole hour. We're going to let him go early because we've got some topics we've got to discuss, Kurt. do you know about this Danny DeVito thing, Kurt?
No, you mentioned that on the break, and I don't know.
All right, Danny's Danny goofy, DeVito. Kurt.
All
first
right.
off, do you know who Danny DeVito is, Kurt?
He's a movie star. I think he's that little short guy that played in a few things with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm pretty sure. Let me look him up here and see. Is that right? Who is he?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's exactly right who he is. Well, check this out first, Kurt. Let's just start here. Let's see if I can.
It's unfortunate that the entire country and is a racist country, and this is one example of the fact that even though some people have given great performances in movies, they weren't even thought about. So it's like we're living in a country that discriminates and has certain racial tendencies, racist tendencies. And so sometimes it's manifested in things like this and it's illuminated. But just generally speaking, we're a bunch of racists.
I applaud their attempts to do something about it, which is great. But again, this is dealing with the symptom, not starting at the root cause of how we even get to results like this, which has to do with inclusion and access and the ability for people of color, women, minorities to get at entry-level positions where you can become someone who can greenlight a movie.
I'm baffled by it. I mean, I would have thought that Idris Elba and Sam Jackson would have been a shoo-in for nominations, but gee, I don't live in Hollywood. We live in an obscure little part of the world where we don't think about these things very much.
There you have it, Kurt. Danny DeVito says basically we're all a bunch of racists, Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a comment for Danny?
I always try to figure out how people figure out what other people are. It's kind of like when you watch those football games or listen to a game on the radio or basketball or whatever, and the announcer says something like, man, that guy was, thinking about doing this, or he thought this, or, like he could go into their mind somehow. And now Danny DeVito doesn't strike me as some, I guess you could say a telepathic individual who can just, know what you think, Sam, and know what I think. But that's kind of the way he's representing himself. But it's politically correct, isn't it, to do this?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. This is Danny DeVito's comments, Kurt, about the white Oscars. Now, you know much about the Oscars, Kurt?
The white Oscars. I always thought they were just called the Oscars.
Well, they were, Kurt.
Oh, okay.
But now they're the white Oscars. You want to know why?
The white Oscars. Because they've got black Oscars now?
No, because you racists only allow white people to, you know.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, there you go.
And I look at this whole thing and I say, Kurt, let me just ask you a question. Let's just start with football, basketball, and music.
Good point.
Are there more white people or black people getting the spotlight and the limelight, Kurt?
Well, I can tell you that according to the Google boys, and who knows who puts that all together, but according to the Google boys, when it comes to football, the NFL, well, they say they're 68% African-American.
Now, let me stop you there. And what percent of the population are African-Americans, Kurt?
I don't know.
The answer is about 12%, sir.
15? Okay, that was a little high.
So when you think about that, though, that's just extremely, 12% of the population, but 68%? Of that sport?
Yeah, or black Americans.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they say 28% are white, with the remaining 4% comprising Asian, Pacific Islander, non-white, Hispanics, etc. That's the NFL. When you look at the NBA, you know, it's very similar. I guess they say the NBA is composed of 74.4% black players. It just, you don't hear a bunch of the white people saying, hey, this isn't fair, do you? It's not that I remember, anyway. You know, it's just interesting when you look at the whole picture, and yet anywhere where somehow the numbers are turned around, like these Oscars, they say, then, oh, you know, this has got to be changed, you know.
Well, what percent of the Oscars are white, Kurt?
Well, at least what I've seen a little bit of, they say it's pretty much just all white guys that do it, you know. You know what I mean?
Well, so, what race is Danny DeVito, Kurt? I don't even know.
Yeah, he's
now he's telling me I'm a racist, you know? Kurt, but I don't even know what race he is.
Yep.
What is he again?
That's what he said. Well, his picture looks to me like he's, what would they say, Caucasian, but, you know.
What if he identifies as black, though?
Oh, yeah. Good point. He could be a self-identified black man.
I find it just incredible that we don't stand against this. Okay? I'm not a racist, folks. Okay? I'm not a racist at all. But it doesn't matter what I say, because the more I deny it, the more they'll love it. They know I'm not a racist already. See? Liberty Roundtable Live.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before.
News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
The Oscars are way too white, they're claiming, ladies and gentlemen, but my question is, Chris Rock is the host of the Oscars, Kurt. What race is Chris Rock?
Well, he's got a very, very deep tan, as far as I can tell.
Wait a minute.
In fact,
so he's like a Pacific Islander?
No, I'd call it black, you know.
Oh, he's a black dude. But, all right.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with, don't really care. The question that I have, though, is, so let me get this right. You got the host of the whole thing, the dude's black, and that doesn't account for anything?
Well, it means that there is no diversity in hosting of it, right? I mean, you'd have to have all races, you know, basically represented equally to have the right, you know, politically correct hosting done, wouldn't you? I mean, you know.
How white are the Oscars anyway, Kurt?
Well, according to the MotherJones.com boys at Raw Data, they did a survey or a chart, you could say, and they say that they've had about 18 black nominees in the most recent decade. And that's about 9% of all the acting nominees during that period. Now, you remind me that there's, what, 12% black people in America, somewhere
about,
in that range. They also noticed that there's about 13% black people in the four-star military officers, 10% in Congress, 3% as university presidents, 2% in senators, 1.1% Nobel Prize winners, Fortune 500 CEOs, 0.8%, billionaires, 0.2%, governors, 0. You know, there's just got to be some fixing going on here, son. You know what I'm saying?
Well, all I'm telling you is it's amazing to me. I don't think that it's out of line when we talk about how white are the Oscars anyway. And this idea that we're a racist country. Now, let me say this. Let's say we are a racist country, Kurt. Is it really going to do good to just run around and say you're a racist? In other words, how do we improve things and make it better, Kurt? How do we, you know?
Well, I know this is going to be politically incorrect, but it seems like we should follow what Martin Luther King said about judging people not by the color of their skin, but by the, you know, content of their character, or basically by their who they are. And isn't that what we always suggest?
I usually go by their fruits shall you know them, just because it's biblical and it's based on results.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I don't know what color Chris Rock is. I don't know, you know, any of those things, but I just know I find this whole thing strange.
Yeah, good point.
All right. Now, I want to focus on this story at the end of the hour because it's a good news piece, Kurt.
Yes.
Life is good for $100 million t-shirt company.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have that handy?
Yeah. Well, you know, and we brought this up a little while back, at least, you know, kind of just in passing. But the bottom line was this family, decided to focus on good things, you know. And they basically just said, hey, there are good things going on in the world. And they literally, I guess you could say, kind of made a living at it.
Yeah, now let's back up for a quick second and say family was doing fine. Then what? Dad got sick. Family melted down first.
Well, yeah, Bert and John Jacobs told this to Business Insider that after their parents had been in a serious car accident and their dad basically was left without the use of his left hand, their mom instituted a practice in their home that ultimately inspired their company. They say each night she encouraged them to share something good that had happened to them over the course of the day. The two men said that this practice instilled in them an ability to focus on the good in life. I guess a quote by one of them said, he wrote this in the new book, Life is Good, that optimism was something that our family always had, even when we had little else. Anyway, today it's a $100 million t-shirt company, and it began with the mother's example of optimism.
And the idea is today life is good, right?
Yeah. I mean, even Jesus told us to be of good cheer. So you work on solutions, things like that. When you hear, for example, Ahmed Bundy, when you hear the words right from his mouth, you know, he's working on fixing things, improving things, making things better for all parties is when I hear him. And yet, when you see what the headlines from the standard kind of media are, armed group, militants bring, I mean, it's just that some folks just seem to be so pessimistic and not positive about working on real solutions, right, Sam?
Yeah, it gets way discouraging, too. After a while, it just kind of bugs.
Yeah, that's right.
And I bring this up because life is good today. And I've been telling people, when they tell you how, Ammon had no choice. I agree he's trying to work on the solutions the best he sees it. But I'm just saying people are like, things are so bad, Sam, we have no choice. And I just disagree with that. I can point out over and over and over the good things that have happened. In America, in the last several years, and people say, well, we cannot win in the courts, we can't do this. And I can point to you tons of examples where we have won in the courts.
Well, when you focus on this thing about the, deal in Oregon, and you listen to the first hour where we had our buddies from the Idaho 3% guys, and they basically indicate how as they look into this situation, not just Ammon, but all these other people being involved, they are finding solutions. And they are, in my opinion, getting the cockroaches to scurry and finding out, these bad guys have been kind of controlling things for a long time, and now, hopefully we'll get things fixed up around there, right?
Amen to that. And I would say this, one of the two of the easy things for the government to do to make the Ammon Bundy situation work well and be peaceful would be, one, to say we're going to release the Hammonds. There's no reason you can't create a pardon for them, even if you had them on probation or maybe an ankle bracelet, homebound, or whatever you want to say. It'd be a huge win for the people. Secondly, you could say we're going to have an honest court proceedings with regards to the following things. We're going to, air out the corruption that's going on in Oregon with the sheriff and the lead county commissioner nicknamed a judge over there. We're going to, and there's a lot of things that could go quite far towards solutions. Ammon Bundy has clearly articulated what he wants. ladies and gentlemen, but the government hasn't articulated what they'll accept or work on with him in any way whatsoever. I find that fascinating. All right, another good news piece, in addition to this mom basically running around saying, hey, life is good today. And I agree life is good today. I've mentioned, even though everybody says things are so negative, I say every day above ground and every day that I can live my life with my family in peace is a good day, Kurt.
Yeah.
I know there's tyranny around, and I know there's a lot of loss of liberty. I get all that.
The sun came up again today.
Yeah,
as far as
roger that. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Good point. So, but what I find fascinating is they say if I sleep in on the weekends, things are going to be good. Are you sleeping in on the weekends, Kurt?
Well, you know, that's a report from Reuters, their health group there, Lisa Rappaport. That's what it says. Sleeping in on weekends may help reduce diabetes risk. Well, if this catches on, you know, think of diabetes just disappearing. But they conducted a sleep experiment with 19 healthy young men and found just 4 nights of sleep deprivation were linked to changes in their blood, suggesting their bodies weren't handling sugar as well as usual. But then when they let the men get extra sleep for the next 2 nights, their blood tests returned to normal, countering the effect of the short-term sleep deprivation. Yep, according to the study lead study author, Josine Broussard of the University of Colorado at Boulder, she said, it gives us some hope that there is no way to extend sleep during the week. People should try very hard to protect their sleep when they do get an opportunity to sleep in and sleep as much as possible to pay back the sleep debt. You've got debt to be paid, huh, Sam? Sleep debt.
They say what I find fascinating is usually they used to say you can't catch up on that. In other words, you can't pay it back like that. But now we're showing that you can. Right.
Well, and like they say in this article from Reuters, the study doesn't prove sleeping late every weekend can counter the ill effects of insufficient rest over every other night of the week, the guy cautioned, and it doesn't prove that catching up on sleep will prevent diabetes. But, of course, they always suggest, researchers always suggest, what do you need? More research, by the way.
Yeah, can I do the simpleton's plan?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, you need to sleep consistently the best you can, and the more you do that, the better off you'll be. But even if you can't, when your body needs sleep, even if you try to catch up, it may not be as good as keeping up in the first place, but it's better than not catching up at all.
Amen.
And I know that's like a simpleton, not very rocket science-like, but I just think, hey, you should have been keeping up on your sleep, and if you did, you'd be the best off. But if you can't and you don't or whatever, then you know what? It's the weekend and I'm really tired, and it's good to try to catch up on that stuff.
Yeah, imagine that.
And I don't even need any more money for that, people. I'm just saying. All right, thanks for being alongside for the ride. 2 hours in the can, hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use always when it comes to LibertyRoundTable.com, sponsored by ThePowerMall.com. We appreciate all of you. Without you, we wouldn't even be here. So please tell all your friends and click on Help Us Grow to donate and get involved today. We the people can restore our grand old republic. This nation shall endure.